I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
With the return of the Football League this weekend, there was no shortage of options for reacquainting ourselves with inter-county gated football on the telly. First time out it's hard to look past your own county, isn't it? I mean, even if you know that by watching that county, you're watching a game that has literally zero relevance to anybody else in the country, not one single storyline that's going to resonate with anyone, to be honest. But I'm here to tell the nation, having watched the Dubs get their league campaign off to a winning start in Roscommon, this could be Cormac Costello's year, you guys. Hi, Murph.
It's actually probably getting annoying for Cormac Costello now, scoring like whatever it was, 113.
113, yeah, and missing a penalty.
Yeah, and like, is he any more likely than he was last year to actually start a championship game? Surely scoring 113 has to count for something, Owen.
It's going to be Cormac Costello's year, Murph. I told you, I'm here to tell you that. That's why I watched the Roscommon game, to be able to tell you something about Dublin's challenge for yet another All-Ireland. Hi, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
Now, as I'm good, I'm all right. As impressive as Costello's one goal and 13-point haul was, there's only one main man we really want to talk about today.
David Clifford! Now it's Killian Spann. He tried to take on the backs here. The man with off his shoulder shaking. Crosses away a goal here for Kerry. Oh. Yes, it is a goal. Brilliantly worked by Kerry. And at the end of it was David Clifford had to tap it in Pat Spillane. David Clifford! And that was Killian Spillane. He spread it wide. Danger here. Chance here for Kerry. It's David Clifford! David Clifford! The chance here. And this kick, soccer style, along the edge. Oh, that could be played in Old Trafford or anywhere. And it's ended up in the back of the net. He dummied one or two players, David Clifford, soccer style. I suppose he's one of those players that could play anything and he would be excellent at. And soccer style, something we don't see a lot in Gaelic football. He dribbled at around one defender into the back of the net. And, well, it's good night, Irene, I'd say, as far as Galway is concerned. 4-12 to 6 points. David Clifford!
That's how they called the hat-trick against Galway on Radio Kerry, with additional David Cliffords added in for effect. I can't hear his name without hearing David Clifford.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had a conundrum in front of you over the weekend, Owen, of course. You just outlined it there, that maybe watching your own home county, it might not provide the thrills and spills that you might expect, but yet, you know, you're still drawn like a moth to a flame. Well, as it turns out, I did sit down to watch my home county this weekend, and the main headline of the week did indeed happen on my watch, but it had little or nothing to do with Galway and quite a bit to do with David Clifford. David Clifford! 3-6, and I think maybe the most humiliating part of this from a Galway perspective is that he got taken off at the second water break. So he scored 3-6 in three quarters of a game, which is just like... It is insane. It is absolutely.
Is there such a thing as is there a perfect hat trick in GAA?
I went back to check and see, was it a perfect hat trick? But the two goals in the second half were both with his left foot. I actually thought for the hat trick goal, the ridiculous soccer style goal, that he had dragged it back with his left and finished with his right, which would make it a perfect goal. But he dragged it back and he had so much time that he could have lit a cigar and then stroked it home with his left foot. He left out the cigar a bit, but did indeed score with his, like, marginally preferred left foot. I mean, who even knows?
Ah, no, he is. I mean, it's a wand of a left foot, Murph. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. He can shift the right when he wants it. But what I loved about that the soccer goal that could have been scored in Old Trafford, as we heard there, was the way he dragged it back. So essentially, he gets the ball. The ball's rolling. The ball's rolled across to him on the deck. He thinks, why bother picking it up? I'll just take a touch. And now I've got a defender and a fullback in my way, or a defender and a goalkeeper, I should say. So I'll just drag it back the way it came, send them the other way, and calmly stroke it into the net. But he seemed to use the top of his foot for the drag back. Do you know what I mean? Normally, a drag back in soccer is executed with a heel or an instep. But whereas it's just whatever way his foot was bending, look, he got the top of it onto the ball somehow and rolled it back that way and knocked it home. This is what happens when you watch a goal 15 times, Murphy. You start seeing these details.
But see, this is it, Ken. I mean, he didn't even drag it back that much. He just kind of stopped it and rolled it just a minute way back the opposite direction, which was enough to send, you know, multiple Galway players flying 5 yards, 5 yards past him.
Is he allowed to do that?
Well, see, this is the question, Ken. I mean, I think that this is a question that GAA authorities have to actually wrestle with. I mean, is this the game that we want to see?
the ban on Gaelic football on soccer-style goals was lifted in 2007, I think, Ken.
Yeah.
Up until then, you were banned from the association.
Contentious Congress vote. But, like, this is it. Like, it's just, I mean, he's so much fun to watch. This is the thing, you know? In my head, I think back to kind of Pádraig Joyce, the current Galway manager, and Ciarán McDonald, who played at kind of roughly the same time. Ciarán McDonald maybe is a year or two older than Joyce. But there was an argument about, well, Joyce was just so insanely, you know, end product all the time. He was an unbelievably substantial, brilliant footballer who kind of did it at the moments when his county needed it the most, and, you know, scored 9 points in the second half of an All-Ireland final, which, you know, is the end of the argument for a lot of people when you're talking about, like, true Gaelic footballing greatness. And then there's McDonald, who, you know, did it in a million different ways for Mayo and to exactly the same level as Pádraig Joyce, but in a very different way. And so you'll still hear people talk about Ciarán McDonald and what a insanely gifted, brilliant footballer he was. And Joyce kind of, he isn't spoken about in that just loved way. And, you know, there is kind of a style versus, or style and substance argument. Like, Clifford has it both ways. You know, he is a deadly finisher, but he also just does things that look so much fun, so much more fun than even, like, the very best of the rest of the forwards in the country. And I think that's it. Like, it's the swagger. Like, it is just, like, the impudence of that goal that I think is why people love him. And it is kind of unfortunate as well. But, I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say that the game needed David Clifford to come along as well, because it's not the most loved sport, even by its own fans. I mean, you know, if you chart how often fans of a sport give out about that sport that they're fans of, I would say Gaelic football is top by miles of there, any of the rest. You know, isn't it, like, I'm not imagining.
Well, hurling's getting there now, which we might get to in a moment, actually. But up until recently, certainly Gaelic football.
Yeah, but, like, Clifford, he just shows us the outer limits of the game, you know? It showcases how good the sport can be. And I think that's what's brilliant about him. Any game that he's playing in is just a game that... And, you know, like, within, I think, a minute, he had scored his first point. And it's kind of one of those as well where, inside the first 5 minutes, it was quite obvious that Galway weren't pressuring the ball out the field, that Kerry were going to be able to pick their heads up and actually pick a pass into him. And as a result, stay tuned, there will be fireworks. Maybe we didn't expect 3-6 in three quarters of a game. I mean, because oftentimes, you know, it's in a situation like this, it's a full back line getting absolutely destroyed. But this was like a team malfunction that just absolutely played into Clifford's hands, because Galway just did not put any pressure on anyone trying to pass the ball into David Clifford. I mean, if you can pick your head up and you can try and find him in a, you know, a reasonably advantageous position, then it's good night, Irene. It's not like you're then expecting your cornerback or your fullback to be able to get the ball off him because he's really big and really fast and really strong. And that's what makes it so much fun. Because you like when you're sitting down, it wasn't much fun for me as a goalless supporter, but for anyone else watching, it's like they're giving him 10 or 15 yards to
see,
run
every
into.
Time, yeah, every time I see him, I think, well, especially when he scores a hat-trick like this, I think this guy has to win All-Irelands, senior All-Irelands, loads of them. Mm. And this Kerry team has to win them as well. And then I remember, what happened again last year in the championship? Oh, they were knocked out of the championship by Cork.
And he missed a few chances. You know, like he went for an outrageous goal that he probably should have tapped over the bar. Missed a couple of frees himself even. You know, he's not entirely infallible. But then again, he is only 22 years old. And that was, you know, a pretty freaky game.
I'm asking Murph, after one round of league fixtures, are Kerry going to win the All-Ireland?
Well, one thing that I did kind of find interesting was how much he celebrated the goals. Like the second goal, he was like...
He was pumped, yeah.
Super pumped. You know, like the third goal, he was laughing like a drain because, you know, why wouldn't you, quite frankly, after that finish? But even, you know, the second goal, he was super pumped up. The first goal that he scored, he was really pumped up. You know, Kerry... Like, they made such a mess of last year. From the point of view of, it's Desi Farrell's first year in charge, it's a massively constrained timescale for him to work with the... Or at least, he had a pre-season, he had five rounds of the league, and then, you know, a black hole opened up for 6 months. It was a chance, without a shadow of a doubt, for Kerry to put some doubt into that Dublin camp. Because, you know, remember how close they came in 2019? They were... You know, they'd gotten themselves into a position, a man up on Dublin, and couldn't seal the deal. But, I mean, they were pretty close. They drew that All-Ireland final in 2019 and played brilliantly in the replay as well, in the first half at least.
Yeah.
So they are really, really close. They had a chance last year to put doubt into the minds of the Dublin squad. Like, is Desi Farrell up to the task here? If they had managed to beat them last year, then, you know, it's a different thing. Now Desi Farrell is an All-Ireland winning manager and, you know, you don't get that toothpaste back in the tube. But at the same time, they have so many weapons. They're so good in so many areas that if they're tuned in, of course they have a chance. I mean, I don't think we're going to see anything in the next 4 or 5 weeks that's going to convince us one way or another about anything, given how close this league is to the championship. It's a shortened league. It's like 3 games and then we're straight into the championship. So, I mean, we have to be really careful, even more so this year than other years, to try and judge what we're actually seeing. But, I mean, who cares about that when we're watching David Clifford, quite frankly? I mean, it's just a joy. It's a joy. And he will win his All-Ireland eventually. We have to.
I mentioned the hurling. Jackie Tyrrell says that he's deeply concerned for the game of hurling. We're seeing glorified free-taking competitions. Cotton wool frees are being given out, which is not a phrase that I've heard before now.
John Colley was giving out yards yesterday after Limerick lost their unbeaten record. They'd gone through all of 2020 unbeaten. They drew in the first game of the league last week against Tipperary. Galway finally were the team to stop them and stopped them quite convincingly yesterday. And yeah, Kylie's kind of giving out yards, talking about how, you know, how the game has changed in the couple of months that we were off, obviously, because referees are now blowing for everything and anything. And it basically boils down to frees are being given for fouls.
Game is gone. Game is absolutely gone.
There are some new rules being trialled and there's an advantage rule. It's been scrapped, basically, in all but goal-scoring opportunities. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. There's a new penalty and a sin bin being introduced for cynical fouls denying a goal-scoring opportunity inside the 21 or inside the arc. And, you know, they should trial this because we've been watching for 2 or 3 years. Hurler beats his man. Hurler will be taken down. The defender will get a yellow card, which is not really much of a punishment at all. And that's it. You know, and everyone seemed happy enough with that. The G are trying to change that, which is fair enough. I absolutely agree with it because there were way too many cynical fouls denying goal scoring opportunities in hurling. There aren't half enough goals being scored in hurling compared to what it was 20 or 30 years ago. But, you know, John Kiley coming out and giving out about, you know, these cotton wool frees, as Jackie Tyrrell calls them. Limerick picked up, I think, 5 yellow cards yesterday for a variety of reasons. Frontal charges, careless use of the hurley, persistent fouling. I mean, teams can also take responsibility for their own action zone. This is also an option available to teams. Swiping across a fella with your hurley, that's not like physicality. That's not refs betraying the principle. It was never a principle of hurling that you should be allowed to swipe a fella across the legs with your hurley in a careless fashion. Like, that's just indiscipline. You know, Seamus Flanagan picked up a yellow card. Seamus Flanagan picked up a yellow card for shouldering a fella on the chin. That's not physicality. That's just indiscipline. That's just a player showing poor discipline and getting punished for it. So, this is it. Like, this happens. You know, there's no such thing as a muted reaction to any change to hurling. Every change is fought absolutely tooth and nail. But the cynical fouling thing is also in football, and this is like a rare occasion where it's a hurling problem has been like transplanted into football. It's usually a football problem that's been transplanted into hurling, but it was a problem, and fouling is an issue as well. Like, I think what John Colley is the sort of foul that John Colley is talking about, they are actually fouls when you put your hand in over the shoulder.
Are you 36 of them though in that game. That means it's a foul every 2 minutes. According to Jackie Terrell, there were 48 fouls in the Westmeath Waterford, was it? I don't even know how you have time to foul that much and still play any hurling. So, okay, I can't see how 48 of them can all be given. Like, hurling always has had a little bit of leeway because of its physical blah blah blah. You know physical it is, and if it doesn't give leeway and you're calling freeze every 2 minutes, that actually isn't going to be an entertaining game to watch. And I have just noticed rumblings over the last few days of people saying, maybe it was Clifford's hat trick is colouring a lot of things as well. People saying, hang on, is football now more better sport to watch than hurling, which nobody's been saying for a long time.
Certainly not, Ode. Certainly not. No one has got on the record with that one for the last 20 years. I mean, I think the change to the advantage rule is pretty daft, because the idea is that you should let it flow. You know, that the game should flow, and I'm in favor of that. I mean, if a player is able to get a hand pass away while being fouled, just let the game flow. I don't see the sense in that change. But at the same time, I mean, this kind of thing has come in since maybe the Cody Kilkenny team, and like, they did bring like absolutely ferocious work rate and kind of tackling into the game, and Limerick have taken it up another notch. But you know, I also think that you're allowed to criticize a team for showing indiscipline, and you're allowed to punish that team for showing indiscipline. And if you have your hand or your hurley at shoulder height, reaching in over someone's shoulder or around the neck, that is a foul. That is a foul. So, I mean, if the change that John Colley is talking about is an enforcement, a more rigorous enforcement of that rule, then that's fine. But that's always been the rule. And it's your job as manager to change the culture in your team that allows that sort of foul to continually be given against you. Yeah. So, you know, like, the GA managers, like, they would wear you out sometimes, you know? Like,
didn't take you long, Murph. Took 2 weeks of the new season.
Yeah, well, you know, they still go away. They're always in my brain. Oh, they're never too far from my brain.
I'll tell you what's always in my brain since the conversation we had in the show last week. These three words: white, water, rafting. Three words that dominated the World Service after the appearance of Owen Keegan, chief executive of Dublin City Council, who came on and stood over the controversial idea of installing a whitewater rafting centre in the heart of Dublin's Docklands at a cost of many millions of euro of public money. We spent a fair bit of time questioning the wisdom of splashing out on such a project, which would apparently appeal greatly to tourists rather than simply improving the basic facilities, sporting and otherwise, available to people in the area at the moment. And if you are going to go down the route of a major sports facility at George's Dock, why not an outdoor swimming pool, perhaps, which would be more accessible and affordable to people who live in the city?
This gives you a range of uses. The swimming pool is much more restricted, doesn't give you the same range of use, and it still has significant costs.
When you say you don't think there'd be anything like the same usage, on what basis do you expect that? I mean, if you see these types of facilities in London, you know, there's lighters around London, where you've got to book a week in advance.
You have very few options for swimming in the outdoors in London. You have huge options in Dublin, right? There's a huge number of people, open sea swimming. It's very, very popular. But there are lots of locations around Dublin where people get into the sea without without any cost, right? So I don't think there would be...
At the moment, I think people jump into the Liffey, but you were telling us that it's the water quality isn't good enough to do rescue training. But it's good enough for
I think they're swimming in the Liffey. We wouldn't encourage people to be swimming in the Liffey.
There's nothing quite like an awkward silence to grab the attention, is there? It's like, even if you're not paying attention to an interview, I know I can say this from my own listening habits. If I'm sort of half tuned in, when there's a silence, it's like, oh, hang on a second, I'm going to listen now. In fairness to Owen Keegan, he very much stood by the project. He defended it to the bitter end of a 40-minute conversation. I'm not sure he changed too many minds based on the correspondence we got in from World Service members, and we got a load of it in over the course of last week. You guys have had a few days to let it sink in. Ken, any change of heart? Did you find yourself thinking at some point over the weekend, oof, geez, decent weather, I wouldn't mind heading, if there was a whitewater rafting facility, I wouldn't mind heading down there and giving it a bash?
No, I'm very much in the Lido camp. But you know, it's a bit like Owen Keegan is a keen kayaker. I would actually use a swimming pool if there was one there. I would be an enthusiastic user of that pool. I mean, the notion that like we're well provided with swimming facilities because the city happens to be next to the freezing waters of the Irish Sea. Which
swimmers are told not to go into if after heavy rainfall.
If there's been a recent couple of sewage days. Leak. Or
luckily, whatever. That doesn't happen too much in Dublin, though.
it's like sea swimming is great, but it's a different type of swimming, really. You know, and if you want to, you know, it's more about like getting in and being oh, don't you feel so alive? Don't you feel your nerve ends tingling? As opposed to like. Actually swimming, like, you know, and then sort of, you know, for an extended period of exercise.
Sea swimming, it strikes me, Ken, maybe it's not actually very enjoyable, but you feel...
You
feel you've endured once you've been in there, so you can feel kind of smug and great. Whether you wear a dry robe or not, you can feel pretty smug about yourself after.
It is enjoyable, certainly in the warmer months. In the colder months, once you do it, you tend to think it was enjoyable in the way that any painful experience that you go through, you tell yourself was worthwhile. But it's not really an exercise thing. It's more of a lifestyle thing, I would say. I mean, which is to say, okay, there are people who will get in and like swim a good distance wearing loads of protective gear. Sure. There is a small group of people that do that, but most people I don't think are really doing that when they're talking about sea swimming. It's a different type of thing. So I know, it's also like not like everybody in Dublin lives right next to the sea, by the way. You know what I mean? There are some nice parts of Dublin that are right by the sea, but there's also quite a lot of Dublin that is nowhere near the sea. This particular magnificent swimming pool that I have in mind would be close to the sea. But also, it's on the Lewis Line, isn't it? Right there on that Lewis Line. What a facility. What a jewel it would be in the crown of Dublin. Yes, I am somebody who would be interested in using it. I admit that. But I feel as though more people will be interested in using this than will be interested in using the whitewater rafting.
Although, you don't need to gather seven of your mates as well. You can just go by yourself, which would also be nice.
I literally can't remember the last time I did something with seven other people. That wasn't a stag party.
Yeah.
Literally a stag party. Like I think maybe my cousin's stag party in 3 years ago.
We did have an emailer offering, Ken, because you did ask how much it would cost just for you to head along yourself, and you were told, well, you wouldn't really be doing that. You would be bringing seven others. We did have a local who lives nearby emailing and just suggesting that he would certainly go with you if you could find six more. So he'd be able to get eight together, I would say. He just felt it was a kind of a lonely sight, the idea of Ken just on his own in a raft. Barreling down that
okay,
course.
Well, I thought a kayak, like, I mean, sure, you can use different types of craft.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, but look, you know, I don't know much about it, and actually, I don't have that much interest in it either. So
that interview is available now. If you fancy signing up to hear it on secondcaptains.com, it only costs €5 a month plus VAT to be a member. Richie is back tomorrow with a brand new installment of the Player's Chair. It's going to be a good one too, as former Meath great Liam Hayes speaks powerfully about his life and the effect on him of losing his brother Jared, who died by suicide aged 24.
My mum has said that to me many times. Anytime she's spoken about Jared, she's normally brought it up to say, "Listen, didn't the football save our lives?" She said that many times to me, nearly all the time she says that to me. And she says, oh, you were a great fella. You know, you brought us all out of the dark place. You brought us to Croke Park and you were able to go out in the field and you were able to do this and you were able to do that, which is lovely to hear your mother saying that you were able to get beyond the experience of finding your brother dead in the football field and you were able to go back to that football field because, you know, the place where I found Gerard, I was back there training within weeks. But again, that's because I'd run fast and far mentally away from the night.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very moving edition of the Player's Chair. That's going to be tomorrow. Liam Hayes coming up tomorrow, so you won't want to miss that one. If you remember, we've also got football coverage through the week with big games in the Champions League race. That's on top of our football show today. And that Monday football show is, as always, available to everybody. But loads of stuff on the World Service if you want to think about signing up. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, guys.
David Clifford!
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.